Welcome to today's Trees and Lines podcast. Today we are speaking to Drew Seidel, VP Distribution for AEP SWEPCO. We talk about lessons learned from his experience with storms, their field platform for tracking resources, and his experience in leading a team of over 600. Have a listen and enjoy.
Welcome to another episode of Trees and Lines. We're thrilled to have Drew Seidel, Vice President of the Electric Distribution System for AEP SWEPCO, joining us today. Thanks for being here, Drew.
Oh, excited to be with y'all.
Yeah. Yes, welcome, Drew.
Yeah, I'm excited as well because you're like me, you're in Texas. And so, you know, I don't know, Phil, have we had anybody on from Texas on this podcast?
I believe we have Co-op Pedernales.
Oh, yeah, we have Pedernales. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So, Drew, I think you mentioned when we were offline that you're in Shreveport today, right?
Yeah, SWEPCO, we're headquartered in Shreveport, Louisiana. AEP is headquartered in Columbus, Ohio, but we kind of have customers in East Texas and in Louisiana here and going further north up in Arkansas as well.
Drew, do you want to just give us, before we kind of explore some of the things, fun stuff that you've been up to, maybe a brief little background about you and, you know, how you got to the position that you're in. And I know you've worked at various plants and, you know, you've got a big role today. So maybe a little background on you.
Absolutely. So I've been in the electric utility industry for over 30 years. Started out in generation, working in both gas and coal-fired plants, you know, for almost 25 years. And then I moved over to distribution about 5 or 6 years ago. And I was kind of told that they kind of let me out of the fence. All right.
So, nice. I like that.
But I did kind of worked everything from like engineering through, you know, supervision, a lot of operations. And then I managed both gas and coal-fired plants.
Okay.
Today I have an opportunity to, take care of the distribution system for our, 550,000 customers here at SWEPCO.
Those of us up north, we think of your area as having a lot of hurricanes, storms. Big part of your job, I assume.
Absolutely. I would say we have seen definitely an increase in storm activity. I think a lot of people can claim that. But a lot of the story goes back just a few years ago to Hurricane Laura when it moved through our area. We weren't at the epicenter of it, but we certainly saw the effects and got a lot of damage. And then we've had Hurricane Delta right behind that. And then we had a winter storm that Snowmageddon, which a lot of people remember. And then recently, back this past summer, we had, probably the worst largest number of customers we've ever had out at SWEPCO. So it seems like we haven't caught a break in the last several years when it comes to large, major storms.
So how many inches of snow is Snowmageddon in Louisiana?
Oh, we had like 12 inches of snow.
Oh, okay. That counts.
And it was like down to zero for, several days there. It was a week and we're not used to that.
Yeah. I'm Canadian, so that when we moved down here and my family was down here and we moved in end of 2019, caught that whole freeze in 20. My wife was like, I thought it doesn't get this cold in Texas. I'm like, well, I guess we're dealing with two extreme weather patterns now in Texas. So it's which I think puts a unique amount of pressure on the grid, right?
For sure.
Which actually leads me to wanting to explore with you a little on this new legislation or proposed legislation, the House Bill 2555. Are you familiar with this grid resiliency piece of legislation requiring utilities to put formal resiliency plans together?
Yeah, in each of our states, we are seeing similar type of requests. In fact, we have plans to file some resilience type plans in Texas, and we'll do something similar in Louisiana. We have done similar things in Arkansas already. So, yeah, it's certainly top of mind for us. And, you know, we kind of started that kind of back about 2000, of all things, here at SWEPCO. And it really followed a major ice event that occurred in our northern kind of what we call Fayetteville area.
Yep.
Arkansas, where we lost pretty much every customer in the state of Arkansas. And so the response was, well, we need bigger poles and cross arms and conductors. And we started up there and we started migrating that across our system with hurricanes and stuff as well. So we definitely are building to a different standard today, but it takes a long time to rebuild your whole grid. And we really started in that northern area, more susceptible to ice. And now we're starting to see these 100-mile-an-hour winds, straight line winds come through. We got lots of really tall trees, you know, 100, 200 foot tall pine trees.
Yeah.
And when they come down, they take the world with them.
Yeah.
Yep. Everything in their way.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest, from a VP of distribution, what's the big challenges of managing those storms?
You know, on most of those storms, it really was just that large number of resources. I mentioned in a storm that happened back in June of this past year, where we lost half of our customers in Texas and Louisiana. It went right down I-20 in the middle of the night, just devastated us.
Wow.
Straight line winds, you know, really we were, our meteorologist said this is going to form in like Lawton, Oklahoma, and it's going to weaken throughout the evening. Well, it didn't do that. And we were the epicenter for it. You know, so when we bring in, we had like over 4,000 resources, just kind of knowing where everybody is so that we can really optimize that response. That's our biggest challenge. And we've always done it by paper in the past. And it seems like we were always a day behind or a couple days behind. And so really trying to get to a more real-time information about where folks are and where real-time damage assessment coming in, it was a game changer for us.
So you've been building some platform to help manage that, or?
Yeah, so we started this concept of several years ago. And it's really kind of for everything that we do, but a big piece of it really was around storm assessment and actually having a tool that would give us capability in the field. You know, as we bring in a lot of assessors, we bring in a lot of other tree resources, veg resources, for them to have access to our maps and our system and us to be able to communicate with them. So we partnered with a company called Arcos, and they really have been working on this field mobility piece. Assessment's a piece. We're also doing some stuff around construction as well. But assessment was the first thing that we kind of rolled out, and it really gave us, well, a lot of insights that we didn't have before when we started to see some real-time communication and information capabilities out to the field that we didn't have before. And like I said, a lot of times, you know, in a storm response, I can think back to Hurricane Laura in particular. We lost pretty much every customer we had in our southern part, everything south of Shreveport. It was very difficult, very, very difficult. Everything's by paper. We didn't know where people were. We thought we did. Of course, you always think you know where they're supposed to be. And then we find out days later, that's not where they are. just having just more capabilities at your fingertips, it's been a game changer nonetheless.
So does the system help you not only keep track of where they are, but does it do other things to help manage? I think tree crews come in and
yeah,
I don't know
absolutely.
How you manage hotels and communications and all those things.
Yeah, there's a resource piece to it. If you've been in, you know, mutual assistance, then you know you have to send in your rosters and all that stuff. Usually it's all by paper or Excel, you know, you're trying to combine all that stuff. And so you know, we're able to load all that information in this resource manager program. We're able to have contact information, we're able to send messages and say, hey, here's your hotel. here's where you're going to go. Here's the location where meals are going to be served. It's very helpful from that standpoint. And then you can start to graphically see on a map where people are. So if they actually are logged in, we can start to see where they truly are. And it helps them be able to connect with the resources we're trying to connect them with. So if you're a circuit coordinator, you can start to automatically see who's assigned to you and get a hold of them more quickly. And we like to tie, you know, those tree resources with to a specific circuit, with a specific circuit coordinator that also has line resources so that, you know, they can be out ahead. And we've got the assessors ahead of them, and they can all see the same information coming in real time. Before it'd be a piece of paper coming in and go to the office, and then engineers would be drawing the jobs, and they'd be sending it over to get the material staged for the next day. Then you're sending them out. The game changer here really was a picture. You know, you could do all that work, and a lot of times they just needed a picture, and they knew exactly what they needed to take care of the problem. So
that's it. A picture instead of sheet after sheet of data.
Well, you know, I think back to Hurricane Laura and so much of that assessment we did, and then subsequent drawing up of jobs, a lot of it really we weren't able to use because it, you know, wasn't accurate. They couldn't figure out where it was supposed to be. I mean, a lot of times our guys, they're really good at what they do, you know, and just giving them the tools they need to get out and make a difference.
Yeah. What would you say, what percentage of your grid you think still needs, let's just say, for lack of a better word, to be overhauled, updated, tightened up? Like, where do you guys think you are in that process?
From like a grid resilience standpoint, I don't have a good number, but it's way less than 50%. You know,
wow. So that's pretty good.
So like I said, we've done it in certain areas. We've changed a lot of poles, but the problem is going from circuit from one end, from the station to the end, and then doing laterals as well. So, you know, I think you kind of do the hard circuit. You start to get a lot of that, start to reconductor. But it's a many, many year process.
Yep.
And presumably not inexpensive.
But, you know, I think you got to weigh that as well, that storms are really expensive. Right. And so we can have restoration happen a lot faster and probably at a much reduced cost if we're not replacing thousands of poles. Right. If it, you know, we're just replacing cross arms and conductors, we can get it up faster. You know, and that's the way it's designed to fail today, you know, on the new standards.
So vegetation management, construction, maintenance, all these are different vertical streams under your purview, correct?
Yes.
Okay, talk to us a little bit about, you know, your vegetation management approach, strategy. You know, where is that program in its evolution?
Okay. Yeah, so it what's interesting is that each one of our states, we kind of have a different approach. And a lot of it has to do with the funding in that state. We are working towards getting onto a 4 or 6 year cycle in each of our states. Certainly further along in Texas than we are in our other two jurisdictions. So what we found probably about 5 years ago, we used to bid out a lot of circuits, and we saw prices double and triple almost overnight. Nice. And, you know, it was, they couldn't get climbers, you know, so that was really an opportunity for us to kind of change our process, change our specs. We used to be ground to sky, and you know, we just couldn't get climbers to do that portion of it. We went to a lot more mechanized equipment, and you know, so now we kind of evaluate our system and we try to map it out. Okay, so what can be mechanized using giraffes or aerial saws? You know, where are the bucketing manuals, and then what section is nothing at all? And you know, we've worked with like Accenture to help us kind of build models, and you know, what's the CMI improvement when, you know, if we're able to move those directions. And so that's the path we're on. And I mean, I think we know how to get there. It's just not inexpensive. And so we're always balancing, you know, reliability and cost. We're chipping away at it, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
I was just curious if you've started tree off right away, tree management, tree risk assessment programs, any of that part of your program now?
So really, I think when we look at trees outside the right-of-way, we're always looking for any compromised trees, anything that's dead. We definitely want to remove those. And, you know, I think an important piece of our strategy is really just trying to widen right-of-ways wherever we can, wherever it makes sense. You know, so if we're running a, you know, 30-foot 15 on each side, can we get to 50, you know, because, you know, when you've got a 200-foot tree, it gives you a lot of cushion that you don't have today. And then likely we'll never have to come back and trim it again, or it's just probably just mowing in that area.
Right.
A lot of our challenge is that first time through when we haven't trimmed it, you know, it's just really, really expensive. And then when you get on the maintenance piece, so we never want to have to go back on a circuit once we've kind of reclaimed it and got it under control. We want to make sure we continue to maintain that. So our herbicide program is I would say at core of our strategy. So it's, you know, we get it trimmed and we want to maintain that. And so, you know, like a 2 to 3 year spray cycle. So we're jumping thousands of miles, it seems like, each year on the amount of spray. And it's making a difference.
Yeah. Well, once you invest in clearing, you want to keep it.
Absolutely. It's expensive.
Yeah.
What percentage of the overall sort of veg is your, you know, your kind of PUC ask every year or every 3 years?
A percent of?
Like if your entire scope, like under, you know, Drew is, I'm just taking a round number of $100 million, you know, how much is the veg portion as a percentage of a total number?
Yeah, it's total, like total O&M, you know, it's like 75%, you know, I mean, yeah. It's a large number.
Large chunk. You have the fun part of the business where you get to deal with the customer side of things as well, I'm guessing, right?
Absolutely. That is the fun part for
that
sure.
That is the fun part. Yeah, absolutely. What, given your environment, you know, the footprint that you guys have getting battered by storms, you know, what is the infrastructure that you guys have put together in terms of being able to communicate with your customers and really, you know, managing that, you know, outage turnaround time and that sort of deal? Like, how are you guys sort of evolving in that side of the space?
Yeah, that has been an important strategy for us. You know, we talk about ETRs, or estimated time of restoration. That's, you know, normally we're talking to customers either because their power's out or their bill's high, right?
Yeah.
And so when we think about, you know, when someone's out of power, you know, on a blue sky, you know, we kind of know what the average time to restore is. And we're going to send them a global ETR and tell them they're going to be back in, you know, 3 or 4 hours, depending upon where they're at. And then we always want to make sure we follow up. But on a storm, you know, it's different. And we always try to get an event ETR out. And so we want to, you know, make sure we try to, when are we going to get 95% of our customers back and get that out quickly? And a lot of times, you know, it used to be that we've tried to be very accurate, you know, and we didn't want to miss that number. And we kind of learned it, you know, well, we need to get something out fast. And you know what, if we just have to use the information we got at the time, and we'll just update it if there's better information. So that's our goal. And then we want to follow up as quickly as we can behind that with a circuit level, so we need to get more granular. And that really comes from our ability, like when we talked about implementing field mobility, more information we have coming in, we get that information from our circuit coordinators when they're out there. When they've looked at it and they know what resources they have, they're able to commit to us when they're going to have that back. And we are able to start sending out those circuit level ETRs very quickly and be pretty accurate about those. And then the next piece to that, you know, is really that when we're actually working on that circuit, we want to let them know that, hey, we call it a field ETR. Hey, we think you're going to be back today. And so that's kind of the general approach. You know, it's not just customers that are interested. You know, when on those kind of large scale events, our cities want to know. The state wants to know.
Yeah.
And so we're having to like also give them information, and they want more like graphical, like, you know, maps and stuff. And so, you know, it kind of depends upon who you're talking to, who needs what. And yeah. we're always trying to meet everybody's needs.
Yeah, no, of course.
Interesting that you say it doesn't necessarily have to be accurate at first. Just get it out there and keep getting it out there. And I assume you refine it over time.
We have a good idea. I mean, in our you know, managers, supervisors, or linemen, they've been a lot of doing this for a long time. They fought a lot of storms all over the U.S., not just here. And once you know what resources you've got coming in, when they're going to be here,
yep.
Well, then we start to get a pretty good idea.
How much of the parent company, AEP, how much of their resources, impact, influence do you draw on as you're, you know, building out strategies or reacting to events? Or are you much more isolated in, you know, as an entity?
It's very helpful being part of a large company like American Electric Power. So we have, you know, a group of like this specific supports us on storms, that handles all the mutual assistance stuff, handles all the contracts. So we just let them know what we need from a resource standpoint, and then they go do that for us.
Okay.
They're also able to manage a lot of business continuity aspects for mm-hmm. us. There's always a lot of people want to know a lot of information. And so they're able to run those traps for us. So we're able to really focus in on actually just serving our customers and trying to get the power back on.
Yep.
So it really helps.
That's great.
And then the other thing is, you know, when we bring in our own internal resources from our other operating companies, that they've got the same systems. It's easy to communicate with them. You know, there are definitely advantages to doing that.
How many people are in your team? Like, how many people do you have in your direct reporting structure?
Roughly like 600.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. But yeah, that's everything from engineers to, you know, linemen, some, you know, administration, you know, so the whole gamut.
Does that include internal as well as partner resources?
That's just internal resources.
That's just internal. Wow, that's a big footprint. Drew, you're busy.
Well, I got a great team. That's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, very cool.
And we're split up into five different districts, and then, you know, we kind of engineering does their thing. And we're one of the smaller operating companies, so we have several that are much larger. AEP Texas, Ohio, they're a big company, bigger than us.
What did you find as the transition from generation to distribution? What were some of the things that surprised you in terms of challenges and, you know, just your leadership?
Yeah. Hey, so, you know, really the interesting thing for me is that in generation, we were really, really good at kind of what I would call asset management or work management, just have had years and years and years of developing processes and stuff. And so at the same time, a lot of technologies were being deployed, which you could do at a smaller scale. When I came over here, I saw that, hey, a lot of that same stuff that we were doing over there years before has been migrating over to this space. And it's been kind of exciting to kind of see. And I think technology has enabled that. It was easier to do, you know, in a small one plant, you know.
Yep.
But when you're out in the field all the time, just trying to manage our work, it's the same kind of thing at the end of the day, what you're trying to get accomplished. But it's just harder because you don't have everybody at your fingertips anymore. You can't walk down the hall. You can't walk out into the plant.
You had a storm. I don't remember what the first storm was you referred to, but then Hurricane Laura. And I imagine you learn lessons each time. You know, what's the big aha moment from your last hurricane?
They kind of build on each other, mm-hmm. right? So I'll just say in Laura, really it was just trying to get a handle on our resources, getting them in efficiently, getting them out. And then Delta, which followed that, lucky we'd have as many effects. We're able to like actually put them into use and see that happen. But this last storm was really an opportunity to actually use this field mobility tool and get a feel for that. And so what we started to see was that there are a lot of other efficiencies there that you don't even think about. Things as simple as when you can start to see which customers have already taken power on a map. And if you're out in the field, you can say, I've already been there. They should have power. And then we can automatically, you know, clear that ticket instead of having to send all these resources back out. Oh, is that customer's lights back on? We didn't know. So just information, having it at fingertips really is a game changer. It makes a big difference, but getting it to the field was the difference at the end of the day. Not me having it necessarily. I really like being able to see where my resources are from an incident commander standpoint. It made a big difference for sure. Can make better decisions, feel more comfortable when we're making commitments to have customers back, but getting more tools to the field.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are going through a bit of a transition digitally, right? Embracing technologies across the portfolio. You know, where are you in that life cycle? Like, you know, you feel like you're halfway there. Is it just a constant, like, you know, hey, we got better tools. We're figuring this out. We're using GIS data. Like, what is the relationship with technology with the business right now?
This is a big step for us right here, this field mobility piece. And it affects a lot of different things. One is just how normal work happens. A lot of times when we go out and do work, there's a lot of extra effort, a lot of extra over-processing that's involved when you just to get everything to match up. We call it redlining processes. If you can do all that real time, it makes a difference. But we're seeing it on the grid as well, whether we're, you know, in the smart grid aspects, you know, DACR distributed, being able to reconfigure circuits automatically. There's so much technology that's really at our fingertips today. Of course, AMI is a big one as well. Just being able to communicate information to our customers that maybe we haven't been able to, or have more information about our customers. Do we have certain areas of the grid where we have more EV penetration? Are we concerned, you know, that we might be overloading the circuit? So it's just the right time, I guess. You know, we need all these tools because things are changing so fast. And of course, you got distributed generation coming in the future, and that's a whole different aspect as well.
I'm sort of interested from 600 reports. So obviously leadership's one of your skills, and our audience, you know, maybe at different points in their career, a lot of them are looking forward. You got any leadership lessons or advice for, the next generation coming in?
Well, leadership's about influence, you know. And I think you gotta find your style and embrace that. We've been on this journey around human performance, okay, and just really understanding people makes a big difference, right? Being interested and not being surprised. You know, a lot of times bad things might happen, right? And what would be your response? And I think, you know, just trying to get to more of the mindset that, my role is more of a coach and a leader. I'll let them, you know, be successful. What do I need to equip them to be successful in what they're trying to do? Because they're the ones serving the customer. We talk about this idea of a black line and blue line. The blue line is what really happens out in the field day to day. The black line is what I think is happening. And they're never the same.
Not the same.
And no job ever gets completed as it's planned. And people always have to adapt, right? And at the same time, we want them to adapt, right? But we also want to make sure they have the capability, right? So if something goes wrong, they're still okay. You know, and so, but a lot of it's like, what does it mean to be a learning organization? How can we learn together? And that only happens. You only know about what's happening if people trust you. And so, if you want to have a reporting culture and know what's really happening, and you got to go and see, and they got to trust you to tell you what's happening, and then you got to listen. So that's been the transformation throughout my career, right? Because that when I got in this business 30 years, that's not how it worked.
Is your career at SWEPCO, you know, the way you've been able to move, you know, between plants and then certainly up in your career, is that happening throughout the organization on various scales? Like, do people have that mobility to try different things and move to different departments?
Definitely the opportunities there. I think as leaders, we need to look for those opportunities for folks, right? Because a lot of times they don't realize that they are there. And so really a lot about leadership, trying to help them see what they're capable of, may not even know that they're capable of, but it's got to be intentional, or it makes a difference if it's intentional. And we try to do a good job of that. I would say that it's something that we always have to try to work towards.
Look around the U.S. and, you know, there's austerity measures, you know, across the utilities, across all different types of sectors. So, you know, there's a tightening of everyone's belt, right, with an high inflation and just the cost of everything, and to do everything is just so much higher today. How have you been dealing with that? How have you guys navigated that? You know, has that really changed the course of your business and objectives, or have you been able to, like, you know, kind of play that juggling act a little bit?
Hey, no, it's a real impact, right? Mm-hmm. And I think most people are feeling that as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, things just are very expensive, like you said, so you can't get as much work done. A lot of it's just making sure we really communicate well with the customer, right? And be responsive. I mean, we still got to do the same thing. We still got to keep the lights on. We still have to provide service. Unfortunately, you know, maybe we can't do as many complete circuit reconductoring jobs as we'd like to do, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't focus on repeat outages, right? So we can still reduce outages a customer see. We just have to think about it differently, right? Yeah. And maybe it'll look different in a couple of years from now, what we focus on, if we have a huge influx of capital. We would deploy that, you know, in ways. I mean, we know what to do. So we have to be more creative. But more than anything, it's customers just want to know what's going on and just communicate with them proactively about what's happening.
Well, it sounds like you guys are doing a fantastic job. Obviously, your variables that you have to deal with, there's a lot of, you know, unpredictability with storms and events, but it sounds like you guys are on the right track, doing some pretty great things. It's great to hear. I didn't realize that the depth chart for you guys was this big. You know, within your department, it's a big group.
No, thank you. Once again, I love what I do, and you know, like I said, the big change for me, you know, being in this job, is you get to be close to the customer. And, it was kind of hard sometimes you're in the plant. And so I really enjoy, you know,
that engagement
making a difference.
In working with the distribution network and dealing with customers, you know, a lot of your employees effectively will have to have some level of bedside manner, right? They can't just be technically competent. They have to have some people skills. So, you know, is that, and sometimes the jobs that you're trying to fill, the people that have those technical qualifications, it doesn't necessarily match with their personalities, or, you know, so is that something that you specifically say, no, we have to find the people that have both skills, or we'll take the technical people and we'll introduce training and guide them in terms of how they engage the customer, the ratepayer?
You know, I think we're fortunate here that great customer service has always been something that's part of our culture at SWEPCO.
That's great.
And so I think it helps. I mean, but we actually have to train our folks, right? We have this great training we go through, you know, like, so that, I mean, everybody can be an advocate for the customer, right? Not just our customer service folks, right?
That's right.
Even our, we have a lot of contractor utility foresters that are out there knocking on doors, right? Well, they represent us, business partners that are out there doing work. So They don't see a business partner. They see SWEPCO at the end of the day.
Right.
And so, hey, we're all, this, all on the same team, whether we're like it or not.
Isn't that the truth? Yes.
Actually, those door knockers are probably meeting more of your customers than anybody else in the company right now. They probably talk to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Has resourcing been a bit of a challenge in terms of, like, you know, some of your locales, like I think you said Shreveport, you know, you've got Tyler and the greater Tyler, Texas area, and then also Arkansas, like in terms of getting, you know, folks into those regions to deliver work, has that been an issue, been a problem?
You know, we were seeing a kind of an issue, particularly on the line worker side. There was definitely this shortage, you know, California, you might heard about California, and they're pulling bed resources too, right?
Yeah.
You know, with the kind of the slowdown we're seeing, we've had to back off of, you know, our number of business partners because of, you know, capital constraints and stuff like that. So, you know, not so much right now today, but, you know, as we transform the grid, and I mean, the spending is going to happen in distribution. It's going to ramp back up, and it's going to be higher than it ever was. And I think labor strategy is a really important part of our strategy for all of AEP. What's that going to look like? And we better be figuring it out now instead of waiting for a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, it's something, you know, we run a portfolio of companies, and, you know, we play in the utility space. And one of the biggest challenges we've identified for the utilities across the board is the fact that the pipeline of people available to perform all these services is very thin, very regionally concentrated, right? So, and there's such a disparity as you move across the country in terms of pay that you see this migration of resources to, like, predominantly the coasts. And so that leaves the middle of the country talent constrained. And so it's been very interesting to see, and you don't necessarily see people rushing into the space, right? Rushing into the industry. So, you know, when you start looking at it and you start mapping out over time, you see a real problem, a real crunch coming. And so the fact that you guys understand that, are thinking about it, planning for it, is great, because you're all going to need to, because it's a real problem.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we saw that we have to build those resources internally ourselves.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you guys just said, hey, listen, we're going to solve this with our own teams. And yeah, I mean, look, it's a slower but more expensive strategy, but at least that's a solve to get it done. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Good for you guys. Yeah, very interesting. Well, Drew, thank you so much. I could do this for hours with you. We have so much to talk about. But this was, you know, this was wonderful. Thanks so much for taking some time and giving us a little peek into your world and getting to know you. It was a true pleasure.
Hey, I enjoyed this. This was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, this is awesome. We'll have to do a part two. And think of some other things that we can chat about.
That'd be fun.
I think you exhibited one of the leadership qualities you need. You said you'd love what you do, and boy, that's a key.
That is a key. Well done.
And it came through, by the way.
Awesome. Well done. Awesome. Hey, thanks y'all for doing this too. I appreciate the opportunity.
No, this is great.
Appreciate it, Drew.
Yeah, we'll see you
soon. It was nice meeting you.
Likewise. Okay.
That's it for this episode of Trees and Lines, brought to you by Iapetus Holdings. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. If you have any questions or comments on any of our episodes or ideas for topics or guests, we'd love to hear from you. Please contact us at treesandlines@iapetusllc.com. We'll chat with you soon.